gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. A jam-packed celebrity and newsmaker hotline this morning. Rob Carr, professor of law, who clerked for Judge Sonia Sotomayor.
Yes, and he was at the hearings yesterday.
We'll talk to him in just a moment. Michael Ian Black, comedian extraordinaire. Richard Wolff, journalist extraordinaire, and Representative Chris Van Hollen, Congress critter extraordinaire, all on the Celebrity Hotline this morning. StephanieMiller.com, the website. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Pontiac. The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7/31/09. See dealer for details. All right, check out the calendar section. Mama in San Francisco coming up on July 25th in Seattle on August 8th.
That's right.
Check it out. Come get tickets. Come see Mama. All right, the hilarity continued yesterday at the Sonia Sotomayor hearings as well-known racist Jeff Sessions continued to press Sonia Sotomayor on whether she is a bigot. And Lindsey Graham, who, by the way, was John McCain's biggest supporter, questioned her temperament.
That's funny.
The good judge yesterday.
I do not believe that any ethnic, racial, or gender group has an advantage in sound judging.
And it looks like we might get health care done. With a public option, Henry Waxman yesterday.
We quite frankly cannot go home for a recess unless the House and the Senate both pass bills to reform and restructure our health care system.
All right, and Representative Nancy Pelosi on the growing CIA Dick Cheney scandal.
As to whether the intelligence community was directed by the vice president to create a program and intentionally withhold that information from Congress.
And as usual, Dick Cheney sent his harpy daughter out to defend him, so we'll get to that later on in the show.
Why isn't there an investigation of Nancy Pelosi? Should be the top of our list. She said that they lied, and they're lying.
All right. Sonia Sotomayor hearings will start again live soon, so we need to talk to somebody quickly that knows a little something about a little something. Good morning. Who is it, Jim?
It's Professor of Law and Philosophy at the University of Illinois, Rob Carr.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for taking time for us.
Absolutely.
So you actually worked with Sonia Sotomayor, and you spoke to her yesterday.
I did. I clerked for her back in 98 to 99 when she was on the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, and we've kept in touch. She's a good friend, a good mentor, and I sat in on a good portion of the hearings yesterday.
And
I didn't get to speak with her.
What was your reaction yesterday? We'll get to hers. I want to know yours first.
A lot of this is a bit like an elaborate kabuki dance, so I sort of went in with those expectations. On the other hand, this was her first opportunity to kind of, ever since the nomination, really show people a little bit of her personality, a little bit of her knowledge, and respond to some of the accusations that have been out here. And so I think she did a really great job.
I did too. I mean, she is scary smart.
She's scary smart. She's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say...
She had no notes.
I know.
That's true.
I know.
Yes.
Boy, I don't think the Republicans helped themselves yesterday, Rob. Do you? First of all, I mean, I think everybody knows Jeff Sessions' background. Yeah, I mean, the reason he wasn't confirmed is because concerns about his, racial prejudices. And here he is, the point guy for this.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When you're sitting in the room and when all of them are there, you can kind of see it. It's a strange sight to see, 19, 20, I forget how many senators are on the committee, but all of them are white. Yeah. All of the Republicans are men. There's two women. And then you have, one side of the room all questioning her about racism. And it's not just Sessions. It's Graham. It's, a number of them. And if you know the judge well, there's just no hint of any kind of prejudice in her. So to see all of those people questioning her on something that you know to be fabricated, I don't know if they know it to be fabricated. I think they might actually believe you know, they might be projecting. They might actually believe or be worried that she has some of those tendencies, but she doesn't. So.
Yeah, I think as Bill Maher has said, you know, the boot of the Puerto Rican woman has been on the neck of the white man in America for so long now. I can see their concern. Rob, you know, the head of the Hispanic Federation had the same reaction I did. I thought the most just really startling moment was when Jeff Sessions, you know, questioned why she didn't agree with another judge of Puerto Rican heritage.
That was pretty crazy. Yeah, it really was. I mean, all along they've been pointing to Judge Cabranes as if, oh my gosh, Judge Cabranes has said this and he's Puerto Rican. And, you know, well, you know, most people disagreed with Cabranes.
Right.
You know, most people on the panel of the original Ricci decision, all of them disagreed with him. And then when he tried to have Ricci reheard on bank, of course, he wasn't able to convince a majority of the judges on the Second Circuit. A lot of his language where he was trying to, you know, which had been pointed out by the Republicans as being, you know, just very kind of extreme and pointing out how wrong she was and so forth, that was an attempt to convince the Second Circuit that they should rehear the decision and change the standard. So he was in litigator mode, you know.
Right, right.
But of course they're not going to come to the same position just because they're both Puerto Rican.
Well,
and he's
that was just
pretty conservative on those issues.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, that was just startling and racist, and I suppose we shouldn't be surprised. but Rob, what does
I like the station. Go ahead.
You have to give me what you spoke to her yesterday. So what was her reaction to the yesterday?
Well, you know, let me try to make sure I don't say anything. It's not like there's any super private, but I just want to make sure I don't reveal a confidence. The biggest thing is she did mention that she wasn't watching the news right then, and I guess President Obama had just given her the advice that maybe she should just sort of stay clear from that during the hearings, and I don't know the extent of that clearness and so forth, but I think she's just concentrating on her job and not really looking at any of the spin or any of that, and I think that's
right.
A great idea.
Well,
she seemed like she was in good spirits. On the other hand, she can always seem like she's in good spirits, so, you know, on a very just personal level, the one thing that started to hit me was, wow, she has so many friends and so much time back in New York. It is going to be on the personal side a bit of a difficult move at this stage in her life. And she's going to have to recreate that, and it's going to be a little bit I think these were just reflections I had, just thinking, she didn't say any of this, but just, you know, recreating all of that as a Supreme Court justice, which is a little bit harder to do sometimes, it's going to be a big move for her, you know.
Well, I mean, and it's clear, you know, how close she is, obviously, to her mom. That was such a touching moment.
Yes.
But you have to speak to, before we let you go, the temperament issue, because how hilarious is it that Lindsey Graham brought it up, who is close to the wildly unpredictable and temperamental John McCain. He obviously, you heard that part, right? Him questioning her temperament.
Yeah.
You're someone that has worked with her. Your reaction?
Okay. A, she has no temperament problem. B, that should be clear from the hearings. I've never seen someone, you know, just listen to people say things about them in the way she has and respond without any amount of fluster, with, you know, extreme patience and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I guess I'm of two minds of what Graham was doing. I think in the back of his head he was thinking, you know what, this is an opportunity maybe just to use my position to kind of push her to reflect on a couple things. On the other hand, I think there's just no real issue there either. I think she is a very prepared, very tough, thoughtful questioner at oral argument, and that's what you want in a judge.
Well, I think as somebody said, Rob, it's like bad lawyers don't like her.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
People that are not unprepared in her courtroom don't like her.
Good lawyers love her because she gets right to the nub of the issue, and she tells you what they're still wrestling with, which gives you an opportunity to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Rob, I thought it was very unfair. You know, he's reading comments from, you know, and of course he neglects to mention all the great things that were said about her. You can take any of us and, you know, ask everybody in your business and see, you know, if there's not negative comments from somebody, right?
Yeah, but there's another background story to this, which is, it's a little bit complicated, but she had a 15-year set of evaluations from the Almanac of the Federal Judiciary, all of which in the judicial temperament category were extremely strong. All of her capability ones were like off the charts. charge. She's Supreme Court caliber. She's one of the best in the Second Circuit. She's brilliant. She's scary smart. And all of the the last 2 years of comments changed drastically on all three of those different measures. The other one was her neutrality, whether she's centrist or not. And it's really just not possible for a random assortment of attorneys to change their opinion so quickly. I personally believe, and during the pre-nomination period, I sort of helped kind of ferret some of this stuff out, but it looks to me, quite honestly, like there was some tampering by someone, I don't know who, in order to kill her nomination at the beginning. So I don't even think, frankly,
that's
not
she's...
her reputation. And when the ABA did interviews, they called something like 3,000. They call a lot of people, and that's just not her reputation. She's a tough questioner, but I don't think that that's...
Well, right. She's been mentioned for this position for quite some time now,
right.
There'd be time for people to... But, yeah, he neglected to read the descriptions of her as frighteningly smart, a very good common-sense approach to the law, extremely hardworking, always prepared. He kind of neglected those. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I just thought, that was just so unfair, and if you want to look at judicial temperament, look at how she handled yesterday.
Exactly.
You can only imagine what she was thinking behind that slight smile.
Yeah. An A++, I think, as Dianne Feinstein said. I think that's maybe add a plus, and that's about it.
Yeah, listen, just these two mooks I work with, just the comments they would make about me alone would torpedo my nomination. So, Rob, thanks so much for taking time for us, and we appreciate you calling in from a small speedboat or whatever, wherever it is you are.
You're welcome. Glad to do it.
All right.
Thanks,
thank
Rob.
All right, there you go.
And they kept bringing up the guy from Chips yesterday. Oh, no, it was Miguel Estrada. Different guy entirely. Totally unqualified guy, but they kept bringing him up because he had a Spanish name.
So, what about Estrada? What about this? Exactly.
How
the same.
Inherently racist was that? It's
childish
like, see,
and transparent.
We like Hispanics.
Hey,
see?
we got a Mexican.
It's
look.
Like Dianne Feinstein said, because he had no record for us to look into, and he wouldn't answer any of our questions. Oh, I mean, that and the thing that I said yesterday when it happened live about... So you didn't agree with this other Puerto Rican.
Y'all think alike, you Puerto Ricans, right?
I was like, what?
Yeah.
And I said at the time, right, I'm like, am I the only one that had a reaction to... to this?
Uh-huh. You voted not to reconsider the prior case. You voted to stay with the decision of the circuit. And, in fact, your vote was the key vote. Had you voted with Judge Cabranes, himself a Puerto Rican ancestry,
Had
you voted with him, you could have changed that case. So,
yeah, well, if she'd voted with anybody of any heritage, she could have changed that case, but she didn't because she has her own mind.
Stick to your own kind. Stick to your own kind.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready for him to break into a West Side Story song, to stick to your own kind.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. Or kill your brother.
Exactly. I think that's what his point was, is the defendant in that case is a boy like that would kill your brother. What? All right.
I mean, there was so much racism both above and below the surface yesterday.
Wow. The Republican douche nozzles are not disappointing in this Supreme Court hearing, I must say. All right. 20 minutes after the hour, back with Tinsel Talk and the latest on the Sonia Sotomayor hearings as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show.
But that just seems intentionally confusing.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number toll free from anywhere. We will join the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live as soon as they begin in just a few minutes. But first, let's check some entertainment news quickly before.
There's no business like show business.
It's time for Tinsel Talk. Let's find out what's going on in Hollywood with Stephanie Miller.
Thank you very much. Our top story, Anderson Cooper really, really wants to please his mommy, Gloria Vanderbilt. Boy.
What a mama's boy.
She could pay off a lot of affairs if he were ever to be, have to do an ensign kind of deal.
Yeah, just from her sales of her jeans alone.
Recently, he was in L.A. working on the Michael Jackson story. His mother gave him a list of items she wanted him to pick up for her at Fred Siegel. Anderson was really busy and pointed out to Gloria she could get the same things in New York. She insisted she couldn't. He gave in and paid a CNN employee $100 to go run the errand for him.
Oh, my God.
He's all busy. All right, we have, who do we have?
We have Anderson Cooper. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to CNN. This is Anderson Cooper reporting. We're here tonight in a landmark joint interview with Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah. Gentlemen, let me be blunt. Is it true that there is a major announcement in the offing concerning peace in the Middle East? Excuse me, gentlemen, I have to take this. Ma, what did I say about calling you on this number? No, Ma, don't cry. I love you too, but I'm busy right now. Later, okay? Ma, no. Okay, I'm your snookum doodle and I love you. Okay. Yeah, bye. Now, gentlemen, no, phone again. Excuse me once again, please. Ma, I'm busy. Yes, I'm in the Middle East. No, I won't run over to Egypt and pick up some souvenir pyramids. Are you crazy? Oh, Ma, please stop crying. Yes, I know I'm an ungrateful serpent's tooth of a son. Yes, Ma, you know I'm lucky to have you. Ma, now's not the time. All right, no, I'm not dating anyone right now. Ma, please, Kathy Lee isn't interested in me at all. No, it's not true what Kathy Griffin says about me. Ma, I'm about to announce peace in the Middle East here. Yeah, Netanyahu and Nasrallah. Yes, they're both handsome men. What? No, I can't do that. Okay, but then you have to hang up no matter what the answer is, okay? Deal? All right. Gentlemen, my mother would like to know if you would be interested in a three-way conference, I mean, here in the middle. You would, both of you. Oh, hey, Ma, jackpot. Will you hang up now, please? Ma, you promised. Mom, you can get Manischewitz in New York. Oceans of it. It's not going to be any fresher if it comes straight from Israel. And same with matzah. Mom, you're not even Jewish. Why would you... Oh, great. We started blowing each other up again. So much for my Nobel Peace Prize. Thanks a lot, Ma. Yeah. Yes, of course, I still love you. Yes, I'm still your sweetie snookums. Oh, there go the air raid sirens again. Look, I gotta go. Yes, I'm sure I'll meet a nice Jewish girl in the air raid shelter. Goodbye! Whatever.
Oh, dear.
And finally, a Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele says the GOP and the NAACP have missed opportunities to engage with each other. We have his address to the NAACP convention.
Yo, 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 what up? RNC and Mahezy, yo. I'm down with GOP, yeah, you know me. Representing D.C., playing the fresh beats here at the NAACP. Hey, my man Julian Bond, what's up?
Please stop that.
Stop what?
All of it. A dreadful noise for a start. Thank you. He's about to be drowned up at the sound of Duke Ellington spinning in his grave anyway.
Duke who?
And take off that ridiculous hat. You look like a moron.
Hey, baby, that's just the way I roll. And speak English, for God's sake. You're an educated man, one assumes. Try to sound like it.
You personally set the civil rights movement back 40 years, at least. Look, I know you want to build a relationship between the NAACP and the RNC.
Straight up!
I'm afraid relations between our organizations will always be strained, considering that the Republican Party has historically been the biggest obstacle to equal rights in this country.
Ooh, that's cold!
And it's not helping matters right now. The Republican National Committee has as its representative a shucking and jiving, cake-walking, step-and-fetch and emulating buffoon.
Step-and-who? Oh, just go away.
Right back on the Stephanie...
Who is that dangerously unbalanced woman?
Stephanie Miller.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Judge Sonia Sotomayor is seated. We will go live to that in just a moment. Jeff Sessions was over there sucking up to her for a minute, wasn't he, Chris?
Yeah, just look, a little.
Look, everybody, I'm not a racist. That was just a joke yesterday. All right. In the meantime, Why? Who is it, Jim?
Here to talk about his new Comedy Central show, Michael and Michael Have Issues. It's comedian Michael Ian Black.
I know that guy. He's on every I Love the 80s show ever.
Well, yes.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
You are hilarious. You are on all of those clip shows. You're the really funny guy.
That's right. That's how that's what my business card says now.
I'm the really funny
really,
one on the, yeah.
The really funny guy from all those clip shows.
Better than being media gadfly.
Exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. Yeah, right. So you have a new a series coming up for Comedy Central.
I do indeed. It's called Michael and Michael Have Issues.
Referring to you and Michael Showalter.
That's right. Michael Showalter.
So this is a sketch comedy about two contentious best friends addressing their issues with each other in the world. Are you actually two best friends who have issues with each other?
Yeah, I mean, it's more or less a true life account of our highly contentious, horrible relationship.
It wouldn't be entertaining if you got along, would it?
No, what would be the point of that? Our lives wouldn't be entertaining if we got along.
What are your major issues with each other, would you say?
Well, I mean, he's a fat slob, for one thing.
The gauntlet has been thrown.
Yeah.
Have you guys actually roomed together ever, or are you just best friends for a long time?
Well, we actually did live together briefly after our sophomore year in college. We shared an apartment on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. That was the only time, and that was enough. That was probably enough.
Now, I don't even know. Do you guys if you're political or not? Because a lot of people have been fighting about politics for quite some time now with this latest election.
Sure.
Yes, I
would say I'm political.
Do you guys disagree politically as well?
Oh, no. No, politically we're pretty much on the same page. I mean, you know, our value systems, I would say, are identical, but the way we express ourselves as human beings are polar opposites.
May I ask, what side of the political aisle are you on?
I'm in showbiz. What am I going to be?
Exactly.
Who am I going to be? Am I going to be Gary Sinise? No, I'm not going to be Gary Sinise.
Have you been watching the Sonia Sotomayor hearings at all? Or
I've been too busy. I mean, I've been following it online, but I haven't been watching it.
Well, let me give you an update. The guy who once said favorable things about the Klan is in charge of the Republican questioning of her, and he asked her yesterday why she didn't agree with another Puerto Rican judge, because he's also Puerto Rican.
Well, why didn't she?
You think America deserves an answer to that, do you, sir?
What's going on?
And then Lindsey Graham, who was John McCain's best friend, questioned her about her temperament, which is...
Right. So we see the irony there.
Yes, you see, it's just infused with irony, which makes it.
Did he reference her spicy Latina temperament?
You know, I think that's coming today. We'll get to that shortly, I think. So, are you an Obama fan, and how do you think he's doing so far?
Oh, I have such a boner for Obama.
You have one of those man crushes, uh huh.
I really do. I mean, I love the guy. I mean, you know, I think we're starting to see the sort of political reality set in and the first blush is coming off his administration. But for the most part, you know, I don't see how he could be doing much of a better job. Does that sound like I'm totally in the tank for him?
No, that's what I don't get. It's like it's been, 5 months? It's like, are you kidding me? It took us 8 years to get into this economy. Are you really think like things are supposed to be turned around by now?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the unemployment thing is kind of frustrating. I mean, obviously it's frustrating for the human reasons, but it's also frustrating because, like, on the cover of the Huffington Post today, it says something like, when is the Obama administration going to act? And everybody, I think, understands that unemployment is the last thing to turn around. And Obama, I think, himself has said it's going to hit 10% before it gets any better. And obviously people's frustrations are justified, but I think we've got to give it a chance to work.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. I mean, that's the thing. It's just like, you know, 10% of the stimulus has been spent. It was designed to work over a couple of years, not 2 months, you know, and maybe it's because our expectations were so high for him. You know, I mean, it's like people
well,
going,
sure
why?
That's it. I mean, and I'm as guilty of that as anybody, where I really, you know, I'm hoping for a change. I mean, that was the mandate. And, you know, change is usually incremental and not spontaneous. So I'm definitely willing to give the guy a chance.
Well, you know, and I think it's also, you know, our attention span. We're kind of like, hey, how come we don't have health care? Ooh, there's another Michael Jackson thing on TV.
Is there another Michael Jackson thing on TV?
You got to go? Yeah.
I got to go.
I personally don't think there was enough coverage. Do you? I couldn't find it anywhere.
Wait, did something happen to Michael Jackson?
You've been in a bit of a blackout. What did you think of that whole circus living here in L.A.?
Well, I actually live on the East Coast, but I'm certainly completely aware of the circus in Los Angeles. And it actually made me kind of mad because Watching that memorial service, which I thought was beautiful, and I thought, you know, well done, but where were those people when he was alive? I mean, you know, Michael Jackson did not have a lot of defenders in his corner for the last, let's say, 15 or 20 years of his life. And for everybody to go on stage and talk about what a beautiful human being he was and what a humanitarian he was and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, my feeling is, where were you? Well, two things. One, that's not the Michael Jackson that I know. And two, if that was true, where were you? Why weren't you saying those things when you were alive?
I think clearly dying is your best career move for many of us in the entertainment industry, unfortunately.
Well, as somebody who's been stuck on basic cable for 10 years, I may have to do that.
Michael, thanks so much for taking time for us. It is Michael and Michael Issues premiering July 15th at 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Comedy Central. Thanks so much, Michael.
My pleasure.
All right, there he goes. He's very busy. Look, he's got another thing to go to right away.
Yes, he does.
Listen, he's doing the rounds. Let's go live and see what's happening with the Sonia Sotomayor hearings.
And I understand that some people have understood them in a way that I never intended. And
with having to explain these comments?
Hope that,
from 8 years ago.
In the context of the speech, that they would be understood.
Well, you spoke about the law students to whom these comments were frequently directed and your desire to inspire them. If, in fact, the message that they heard was that the quality of justice depends on the sex, race, or ethnicity of the judge, is that an understanding that you would regret?
I would regret that because, for me, the work I do with students, and it's just not in the context of those six speeches, as you know, I give dozens more speeches to students all the time and to lawyers of all backgrounds. And I give and have spoken to community groups of all type. And what I do in each of those situations is to encourage both students and, as I did when I spoke to new immigrants that I was admitting as students, to try to encourage them to participate on all levels of our society. I tell people that that's one of the great things about America, that we can do so many different things and participate so fully in all of the opportunities America presents. And so the message that I deliver repeatedly...
What an awful message to the children.
...context of all of my speeches is, I've made it, so can you. Work hard at it. Pay attention to what you're doing and participate.
Let me ask about another speech you gave in 1996 that was published in
so
the Suffolk.
So we don't have to look at your
University
sterling
Water,
record. And
Where you wrote what appears to be an endorsement of the idea that judges should change the law. You wrote, quote, change, sometimes radical change, can and does occur in a legal system that serves a society whose social policy itself changes. You noted with apparent approval that, quote, a given judge or judges may develop a novel approach to a specific set of facts or legal framework that pushes the law in a new direction, close quote. Can you explain what you meant by those words?
The title of that speech was Returning Majesty to the Law. As I hope I communicated in my opening remarks, I'm passionate about the practice of law and judging. Passionate in sense of respecting the rule of law so much. The speech was given in the context of talking to young lawyers and saying, don't participate in the cynicism that people express about our legal system.
What kind of... I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Let her make her point!
And I was encouraging them not to fall into the trap of calling decisions that the public disagrees with, as they sometimes do, activism or using other labels, but to try to be more engaged in explaining the law and the process of law to the public. And in the context of the words that you quoted to me, I pointed out to them explicitly about evolving social changes that what I was referring to is Congress is passing new laws all the time. And so whatever was viewed as settled law previously will often get changed because Congress has changed something. I also spoke about the fact that society evolves in terms of technology and other developments, and so the law is being applied to a new set of facts. In terms of talking about different approaches in law, I was talking about the fact that there are some cases that are viewed as radical, and I think I mentioned just one case, Brown versus Board of Education.
Thank you.
And explaining and encouraging to them to explain that process, too.
All right.
Oh, she wanted to legislate from the bench. Is that what you're saying?
Right-wing nozzle or otherwise, black people still wouldn't be able to marry white people, and women wouldn't be able to vote, you moron. That's radical, isn't it? 44 minutes after, that's exactly what she meant,
right?
Some things that were considered radical at the time because they changed precedent. All right. 45 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
May cause dizziness, sexual nightmares, and sleep crime.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 49 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Sue in Rockville, Maryland, with her real-time comments on the Sonia Sotomayor hearings. Hello, Sue.
Hey, good morning, you guys.
Good morning.
Jim, I'm sorry I'm last, but mazel tov on your wedding.
Oh, thanks.
Great, good news. Two things. First of all, Jim, put it in the back. It's my birthday tomorrow, so I would love a happy birthday as Kim Jong-il. We don't know how much longer he'll be here. But yesterday, my favorite part was when the elf, Senator Sessions,
yes.
he tried to put her against one of her colleagues and say that her colleague said this, which was oppositional to what and was right, and Sonia
right.
just turned around and said, well, she's right here if you want to talk to her and ask.
Yeah, right. She's right here supporting me.
If you're going to try to throw someone against the person you're interviewing, make sure they're not sitting there in support of them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Good tip, Sue.
Happy
All right,
birthday
let's...
to you. Happy birthday to you.
No.
Oh, kidding.
Oh,
I should arrive. I feel happy.
For comedy purposes, we just hope that he is inflicted with several more things that have R's in them.
Yes.
All right, let's rejoin the Sonia Sotomayor hearings. John Cornyn is questioning her.
The process of judging for me is what life experiences brings to the process. It helps you listen and understand.
What?
It doesn't change what the law is or what the law commands. A life experience as a prosecutor may help me listen and understand an argument in a criminal case. It may have no relevancy to what happens in an antitrust suit. It's just a question of the process of judging. It improves both the public's confidence that there are judges from a variety of different backgrounds.
Look, he's not even listening to her. He's shuffling through his papers for his next gotcha.
I feel that all issues will be better at least addressed. Not that it's better addressed, but that it helps that process of feeling confident that all arguments are going to be listened to.
Can I say these right-wing tools are in way over their head?
Yes, they are.
Intellectually.
She's scary smart.
Logical differences will make a difference in judging.
I'm not sure exactly where that would play out, but I was asking a hypothetical question in that paragraph. I was saying, look, we just don't know. If you read the entire part of that speech, what I was saying is, let's ask the question. That's what all of these studies are doing. Ask the question if there's a difference.
Republicans are not critical thinkers, are they?
No.
And saying, you know, it doesn't happen. Isn't an answer to a situation. It's consider it. Consider it as a possibility and think about it. But I certainly wasn't intending to suggest that there would be a difference that affected the outcome. I talked about there being a possibility that it could affect the process of judging.
As you can tell, I'm struggling a little bit to understand how your statement about physiological differences could affect the outcome or affect judging, and your stated commitment to fidelity to the laws being your sole standard, and how any litigant can know where that will end. But let me ask you on another topic.
God. Grasping at straws, Judge?
Yeah. There was a Washington Post story on May the 29th, 2009, where that starts out saying the White House scrambled yesterday to assuage worries from liberal groups about Judge Sonia Sotomayor's scant record on abortion rights. And White House goes on to say White House press secretary said the president did not ask Sotomayor specifically about abortion rights during their interview. Is that correct?
Yes, it is absolutely correct. I was asked no question by anyone, including the president, about my views on any specific legal issue.
Do you know then on what basis, if that's the case, and I accept your statement, on what basis that the White House officials would subsequently send a message that abortion rights groups do not need to worry about how you might rule in a challenge to Roe versus Wade?
No, sir, because...
It's established law.
You just have to look at my record to know that in the cases that I addressed on all issues, I follow the law.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Roe v. Wade is established law.
Who was apparently a senior partner in the law firm that hired you as a corporate litigator.
Yeah, we want you to be an activist on that one because we don't like that law.
Yeah.
Would he say that he thinks support of abortion rights would be in line with your generally liberal instincts? He's quoted in this article saying, quote, I can guarantee she'll be for abortion rights, close quote. On what basis would Mr. Pavia say that, if you know?
I have no idea, since I know for a fact I never spoke to him about my views on abortion, frankly, on my views on any social issue. George was the head partner of my firm, but our contact was not on a daily basis. I have no idea why he's drawing that conclusion, because if you looked at my record, I have ruled according to the law in all cases addressed to the issue of the termination of abortion rights, of women's right to terminate their pregnancy. And I've voted in cases in which I've upheld the application of the Mexico City policy, which was a policy in which the government was not funding certain abortion related activities.
Do you agree with his statement that you have generally liberal instincts?
Oh, stop it.
If he was talking about the fact that I served on a particular board that promoted equal opportunity for people, Puerto Rican Legal Defense and Education Fund, then you could talk about that being a liberal instinct in the sense that I promote equal opportunity in America and the attempts to ensure that.
Snap.
But he has not read my jurisprudence for 17 years, I can assure you. He's a corporate litigator, and my experience with corporate litigators is that they only look at the law when it affects the case before them.
That even got a chuckle out of Cornyn. Yeah.
Well, I hope, as you suggested, not only liberals endorse the idea of equal opportunity in this country. I think bedrock doctrine that undergirds all of our law.
Uh-huh.
But that brings me, in the short time I have left, to the New Haven
Except
firefighter
for the communists
case
and the NAACP, you know, the right, Senator Sessions?
New Haven firefighters who are here
all
today.
Right. 57 minutes after the hour, back with MSNBC journalist Richard Wolff. And live Sonia Sotomayor hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, and I feel good.
Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it, 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Representative Chris Van Hollen coming up on the Celebrity Hotline to discuss health care and much more in the Sotomayor hearings. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris Lavoy, voice deity Jim Ward, me, Stephanie Miller. This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Pontiac. The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone. Like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the 5-door Pontiac. Buy, visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7:30, 1:09. See dealer for details. All right, lots of big breaking news. The Sonia Sotomayor hearings on breaker at this moment from yesterday.
As I've indicated, my record shows that at no point or time have I ever permitted my personal views or sympathies to influence an outcome of a case.
All right, and the House Dems unveiled a revised version of a health care reform yesterday with a public option.
This bill is a starting point and a path to success.
Representative Nancy Pelosi, and of course Dick Cheney's harpy daughter, defending him.
Stop it. Well, she is a harpy.
From his the latest revelations of his law breaking.
Well, you've got some Democrats up on the Hill who are suggesting something that I think they're trying to, they're hoping will provide some cover for Speaker Pelosi.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
The fact that your dad.
Hey, the Hague called for your daddy on line three.
Yeah. Why does she sound like a teenage boy?
I was curious about that myself. I thought we'd play
and
the
she's
wrong.
She's not even the gay one.
I know.
I thought we'd play the wrong soundbite. All right. If only there was someone in the thick of the news that could give us their take on it.
Well, here to talk about his new book, Renegade, The Making of a President, and about other news of the day, it's veteran political reporter Richard Wolff.
We love this guy. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
It's so nice to have you on again.
Do you play the trumpet for everyone?
No.
No, just you.
You.
Oh,
just
I'm
you.
Honored.
So, you obviously, for your book, got unprecedented access to President Obama. You can probably talk about how he arrived at the Sonia Sotomayor choice.
Yeah, he basically arrived at it well before he ever came close to winning the presidency. He spent a lot of that very long campaign slotting people in and out of positions, a bit like the way he would play around with his basketball teams, and maybe it was sort of fantasy presidency or something. But, the shortlist was pretty short by the time he got to the transition, and, while he rails against sort of ethnic politics and has never been particularly good at it, there was clearly a desire to have a well-qualified woman, a well-qualified Latino or Latina, and, she had been at the top of many lists for a very long time. I think, someone who taught constitutional law, as Obama had done at the University of Chicago, was clearly looking for someone with the intellect, the smarts, the sort of public service sentiment, which has become known as empathy, to do this job. But
yep.
he picked it pretty early.
Well, and justifiably so. If your reaction is the same as mine to the hearings the last couple of days, I don't know what you think, but boy, she is frighteningly smart.
She is smart, and you know what? What is really interesting is that she clearly has the perspective of a trial judge and a former prosecutor, and that has really come through in the testimony. You know, when you compare her to, say, John Roberts, someone who argued cases in front of the Supreme Court, a constitutional lawyer approaches these things differently. So, when she talks about justice and the courts, she is really talking about the real-world impact of the courts, as opposed to a lot of the super brainy sort of egghead types who want to talk about principles and the Constitution. Now, the Supreme Court obviously does deal with constitutional law, but it also deals with real-world cases that come up through the system. And having someone with a trial judge experience has got to be useful, no matter whether you're from the left or the right.
Well, are you enjoying the unintentional hilarity of Jeff Sessions, who, of course, did not become a judge because of his own questionable racist tendencies, questioning her about being a racist, essentially?
I've got to tell you, I was surprised, shocked even, the way he portrayed this whole battle in the politics of it. On the one side, there are people who believe in the truth of words and God and America, and on the other side, there's this weird bunch of hippies who doesn't think there's any truth and opposes under God and sides with terrorists. And I mean, it was really that simple for him. Oh, and they are all in it for one ethnic group or another. And you know what? He could have transposed Sotomayor for Obama, frankly, and the politics would have been just the same.
Right.
The serious questioning came from people like Orrin Hatch on the Republican side, who was really digging into constitutional law and her casework, her opinions, over 17 years worth of them. But, you know, the politics of this is playing out as, okay, she's a politician, she made some speeches, she said some dumb stuff, therefore she's disqualified. Really, the Supreme Court is not actually about what people say in speeches. It's whether they can do the job of being a judge on the highest court in the land. That's it.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I thought, you know, I have to say, even we were startled, though, by, you know, an Hispanic organization said the same thing I did, that this question that Jeff Sessions asked her, like, essentially why she didn't agree with another judge because he was also Puerto Rican.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, was the most startlingly racist. And the way they kept bringing up Miguel Estrada. Like,
what's your problem with it?
We like Hispanics.
That's what empathy is all about. You know that.
Oh, my God. I mean,
I love, by the way, this is one I really love. The idea is, of course, that old white men have no empathy for each other whatsoever. You know? And if you ever go to the golf club, you will know that they all hate each other. They're totally objective about everything in life. I mean, it's ridiculous. Everybody, let's face it, everybody leans with people who are like them. The job of a judge, whether you're male, woman, you know, Martian, whatever it is, is to dissociate yourself from the emotions and look at things on the facts. Whether or not she can do that should be clear from 17 years worth of legal opinions. And, you know, I suggest that the lack of arguments they're presenting about her alleged bias means that they're really grasping at straws.
Richard, as an esteemed journalist, you have to tell me if I'm misunderstanding this Dick Cheney CIA scandal. So we just played Liz Cheney saying that this is all about covering for Pelosi. Hasn't she just been vindicated, essentially, by these latest revelations?
Well, let me just say that esteemed journalist may be contradiction in terms. But given that, let me try this one. People were shocked that anyone in Congress, especially a Democrat who is in leadership, would suggest that the CIA would lie. So, look, she was obviously talking about a different program, but I think the sort of the umbrage, the sort of mock outrage and protest, it's just got to stop, because it's just not. This is why people are cynical about politics. I mean, they really are. You go out and say, how could anyone think the CIA lies? Everybody knows this. That's the point of the CIA.
Yeah.
I mean, the question is, are they lying for us or somebody else?
Yeah,
and,
right.
And
they're not supposed to lie to us.
Well, it seems to me that the oversight that Congress has is so minimal, it doesn't even deserve the name oversight. All the CIA has to do is go up there, say they're doing stuff, and there's nothing Congress can do about it, whether they like it or not.
Yep.
But not to tell them, or to lie, or to hide stuff, it is pointless, and that's why it could only have come from a mind like Dick Cheney's.
Yeah, exactly. Richard, before you go, you are an esteemed journalist, but you know I like to get to the little gossipy tidbits in your book.
Yes, please.
Particularly
the
gossipy Hillary tidbits, since she's getting ready to give a big speech.
Big speech.
Talk about Obama spotting Hillary's inner weakness when they argued on an airport tarmac in D.C. Tell us what that was all about.
Oh, well, listen, they were getting into the sort of heated exchange, what they call in diplomacy a frank exchange of views. And, you know, what they did was she called him over to apologize for something one of her campaign officials had said in New Hampshire about him taking drugs, and the Republicans going after him for that. You know, this was a very high level of political debate.
Yeah.
And he came after her for some crazy emails about him being Muslim that one of her volunteers had sent out. And they end up pushing and shoving each other and poking each other.
Oh, really?
No way.
Really. Now that, of course, they're the best of friends.
Yeah, right.
and he puts his hand on her to basically say, hey, chill. And she goes crazy because, you know, frankly, it was a patronizing thing to do. And that's when he comes back on his plane. It's just the two of them, and the handful of staffers are sort of peering out the airplane windows looking at this stuff. And he comes back and says, yeah, I never saw that moment of weakness before in her eyes. I think we can win this one. And the interesting thing here is, by the way, he set this up. He set this up, the whole transition and giving her state and all that stuff.
Right.
With the idea of there being a check and balance. So she would get some appointments, but she wouldn't get all of them. This has been a course of such strife.
You know, who was going to name the ambassadors? Was it going to be her people or his people? And who would the ambassadors report to? It's really interesting that she feels she needs to go out there and be relevant with a speech. It's like having to humanize someone. You never, don't want to have to show you're human, and you never want to have to show you're relevant. So I think that's a kind of striking thing that she feels she has to do this today.
Interesting. How would you characterize their relationship now, though?
Well, I think there's a lot of respect there, and she commands an audience, and she executes his brief, and that's the way they like it. But is that enough for the people around either of them? No, it's not. And I think it's very hard to get beyond the machinations and the political conspiracists who feel that their careers are bound up with these principles. So, you know, there's a lot of desire in the people around Clinton and the people around Obama to continue this fight. So I think this bubbles up again and again and again. This is just the first round.
Wow. The airport scuffle is just delicious stuff. Thank you for that. I think if that had gone further, she could have taken him.
She could have, what's that line in Monty Python? She could have nibbled his ankles.
A couple of shots, and she could have taken him in a bar fight. All right, thank you, Richard Wolf. We appreciate it, as always.
My pleasure.
All right, there we go. Yay. Renegade is the book.
How appropriate that we have an episode of Pantsuit and Jug Ears coming up.
We do.
Next hour.
It's our favorite series, the Hillary and Obama series. Which is it? Pantsuit and then Jug Ears?
I don't remember.
It's Pantsuit and Jug Ears. That's what we think. Okay, so they are on a break from the Sonia Sotomayor hearings. Let's go to Catherine in Tucson. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Kathy in Tucson. I am a Puerto Rican, and I am so proud of, I guess, I don't know if it's patronizing homegirl, because she can remember and defend everything from 17 and 16 years ago when most of these dudes questioning her don't even remember what they had for breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. So, Catherine, if you're Puerto Rican, I assume then, according to Jeff Sessions, you agree with everything she's ever said or done because she's also Puerto Rican.
Absolutely, 100%. I agree with everything that I don't even know what she said.
All right. Thank you, Catherine. I appreciate it. Let's go to Dan in Chicago. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, hi. I think you're just exactly right in your play-by-play because, I mean, you get to the point that life is adjustments and balances that go on every day, whether it's technology or private life or the branches of government. And we need somebody who can actually think it through and sort it out and give it perspective.
Yeah. Oh, she's running circles around these guys intellectually, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember reading somewhere some paper by a guy named Wilson who wrote about the Supreme Court originally, and it was to have someone with perspective. It was because everybody else had to follow the law, and it goes finally to somebody who knows something about life, respects the law, and knows something about life, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Jackie in Santa Cruz. You're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hey, Jack.
Yeah, hi, Steph. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, I just want to say something about Sotomayor. You know, I don't know what the Republicans are squawking about. They've been permanently disgruntled ever since they allowed Bush and Cheney and Rove to steal their party away from them and to wreck it completely.
Yep.
And now they're squawking about Sotomayor. You know, she's a great jurist, I know. She's brilliant, but she isn't exactly a flaming liberal.
I know.
So I don't know what they're squawking about.
No, exactly. She's not liberal enough for my taste.
Not for mine, even though she's great. I know she is. But you know something? If she doesn't get in, I hope Obama gets someone in there that they accept for some strange reason or another, and I hope she gets in there, and I hope she absolutely puts the fear of God into Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, exactly. All right. 20 minutes after the hour, back with more of the... Oh, they're back. Back with more of the live Sonia Sotomayor hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
What the hell was that?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 24 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. David in Washington, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show on Liz Cheney. Hello, David.
Hi, Stephanie. Can't wait to see you in Seattle in August.
August 9th for the town hall. Go to the calendar section of stephaniemiller.com.
So so excited for that. Yeah. Anyways, while Sonya was being confirmed yesterday morning, Liz Cheney was like stiff-arming her way over Mika Brzezinski.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys caught that. But and then also, you know, posturing as if she alone has the pulse of the nation, and not to trust Democrats, you know, national security. Newsflash for Dick and Liz. Yesterday's Washington Post ABC poll, 55% of Americans polled trust Obama to combat terrorism, to just 32% supporting congressional Republicans. So,
yeah.
Hit that, Liz.
Ha ha. Oh, the Dick and Liz show. I can't get enough of it.
We have a little bit of breaking news.
Yes, Cub reporter Chris Lavoy.
The Senate Health Committee has passed a version of the health care reform bill, so that is the first panel to act on President Obama's overhaul of the health care system. So that's good. It's good news.
It is good. Good, good, good. So Sonia Sotomayor kept her cool yesterday, even as she was being portrayed as just the opposite, a hot-headed judge who's sometimes mean to lawyers. By Lindsey Graham, who's John McCain's best friend. He, the unbelievable anger management problem.
Yeah.
He raised the subject, citing anonymous comments in the Almanac of the Federal Judiciary from lawyers who called her a terror on the bench and temperamental and excitable. Graham acknowledged there were also favorable comments that I guess he didn't have time to read.
No.
Sotomayor said the anonymous comments may be due to her tendency to ask some questions at oral argument. She said it means they're peppered with questions, explaining that some lawyers find the process undergoing unpredictable and sometimes contentious questioning difficult and challenging. Graham cut her off in the midst of her. He said, if I may interject, they find you difficult and challenging. Do you think you have a temperament problem? He demanded. She said, I can only talk about what I know of my relationship with the judges of my court and lawyers who appear regularly in my circuit. I ask tough questions, but I do it evenly for both sides.
Yep.
Let's see, where do we, let me skip to cut seven, Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday. Senator Lindsey Graham.
I like you, by the way, for whatever that matters.
It doesn't.
Since I may vote for you, that ought to matter to you. One thing that stood out about your record is that when you look at the Almanac of the Federal Judiciary, lawyers anonymously rate judges in terms of temperament. And here's what they said about you. She's a terror on the bench. She's temperamental, excitable. She seems angry.
Excitable.
She's overly aggressive, not very judicial. She does not have a very good temperament. She abuses lawyers. She really lacks judicial temperament. She believes in an out of control. She behaves in an out of control manner.
Please.
She makes inappropriate outbursts. She is nasty to lawyers. She will attack lawyers for making an argument she does not like. She can be a bit of a bully. When you look at the evaluation of the judges on the Second Circuit, you stand out like a sore thumb.
Her response next.
Stephanie Miller.
Look what the homosexuals have done to me.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. So Senator Lindsey Graham, we mentioned before the break, was questioning Sonia Sotomayor's temperament yesterday. He, of course, thought John McCain had the temperament to be president. So he read some negative comments about her, but he didn't have time for the good ones, apparently. He just mentioned that there were some. Senator Lindsey Graham.
There are plenty of statements in the record in support of you as a person
that
do not go down this line. But I would just suggest to you, for what it's worth, Judge, as you go forward here, that these statements about you are striking. Mm-hmm. They're not about your colleagues. You know, the 10-minute rule applies to everybody. And that, you know, obviously you've accomplished a lot in your life, but maybe these hearings are time for self-reflection. This is pretty tough stuff that you don't see from about other judges on the Second Circuit.
What a patronizing tool. I just think, you know, Missy, how about we just give you a little time out? You just don't reflect on that. You can
about your spicy Latina temperament.
Whew. Wow.
You're a hot tamale, is what I'm saying.
Okay. By the way, for any fair observer, Sotomayor has a reputation in the courthouse where she's worked for 17 years as a judge who studies each case thoroughly and is aggressive in questioning, more so maybe than some of the other judges. But she's persistent, doesn't express anger in a courthouse where several judges have shouted down lawyers, where one once angrily tossed a stack of papers submitted by lawyers on his desk to demonstrate his disgust with the volume of them. That was not Sonia Sotomayor.
Right.
Her voice in the courtroom is similar to what senators have seen at her confirmation hearing, where she appears intense but also smiles frequently and is generally good. Good-natured. A fellow Second Court Judge Guido Calabresi said she is someone who questions fiercely. Good lawyers love it when you say, here's my problem now answer, and a bad lawyer goes into a panic. So, yeah, maybe bad lawyers don't like her so much.
Yeah.
All right. If only there was somebody else in the midst of this whole debate over that and health care in D.C., we could...
Well, in a very timely manner here to talk about health care reform. From the great state of Maryland, it's Representative Chris Van Hollen.
One of our very personal favorites. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Stephanie. I was just thinking that if Senator Graham wants to talk to somebody about the need for self-reflection, he probably should spend a little bit more time with his governor down there.
Yes, exactly.
I think he's got years of self-reflection coming, and yes. I think he could use Senator Graham at his side.
Yes. You know, is it me? I mean, Congressman, we just had a take that not only were they they're not helping themselves by being patronizing, but there were things that were out-and-out racist. I mean, like Sessions asking her why she didn't agree with another judge who was Puerto Rican. I mean, are you kidding me?
It's interesting these guys say that they want this to be about nothing about race, and then they make it all about race. In other words, that, you know, her decisions should reflect nothing about you know, her background, and then all they want to talk about is her background and comparing herself to other, you know, minority judges or other leaders. I think that they have they've clearly undermined their own arguments here, no doubt about it.
Well, I mean, and that's the other thing people just found incredibly, just again, sort of blatantly, you know, racial politics, that they kept bringing up Miguel Estrada, who, you know, as Senator Feinstein said, he didn't get confirmed because he had no record. And he wouldn't answer any questions that we wanted to ask. But, you know, but they kept bringing it up. Like, see, we like Hispanics. We want Miguel Estrada. I mean,
no doubt. Every other word was Estrada. And they clearly perceive themselves to be very vulnerable, trying to have it both ways. And in the process, I think they just exposed themselves and undermined their arguments. So, I think it was... you know, from her perspective, the more time they talk, probably the better for her.
Yeah, exactly. My other favorite moment yesterday is Alberto Gonzalez feels that she has a lot of explaining to do.
Yes, you're right.
A little bit of irony in that.
No doubt about it.
Now, Congressman, I guess the breaking news this morning is the Senate?
Yes, Senate Health Committee has passed the first portion of health care reform.
Okay, so. after obviously you guys in the House unveiled a revised version of the health care reform yesterday. So tell us your take on what is happening and what will happen here on health care.
Well, things are moving forward quickly. Now we're beginning to, you know, really get into the details here, and you're beginning to figure out who supports the status quo and who really wants to reform the healthcare system, because we all know there are a whole lot of special interests that like things just the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're making a lot of money off of a system that is broken in so many ways, and now we're going to be able to separate those who just, you know, like to talk the talk from those who are actually willing to do something about it. We're determined to move forward with a healthcare reform bill in the House before August, and the Senate committed to the president the other day that they wanted to move forward on the same schedule.
Well, you know, and once again, the president was right. He just said this, didn't he, yesterday, the day before, that, you know, do not, the naysayers and the cynics, we are going to get this done. We are going to get health care, and it looks like it's moving that way.
Yeah, I think the American people have been very clear that they want health care reform. You're going to see more and more ads trying to scare the American people with total distortions. And so I think it's important that we be very clear. Right now, every American who has private health insurance is paying more than $1,100 a year in hidden taxes because of our broken system, because there's so many people who are not covered. People are paying for that. It's just that they don't see it. And so the whole purpose of this is to bring down the costs of people's health care over a period of time. They're going to get more choice and more competition with the plan that the president's put forward. And it's important that they understand that for those who have health insurance that they like, they get to keep it. And if they don't like what they've got, they're going to be given a choice of private plans, a number of private plans, or a public health option.
Hmm.
But it will be their choice.
Huh, that's weird.
Their choice.
You almost say it like it's an option.
exactly.
Which some people have a hard time understanding, as do, you know, they have a hard time understanding that, you know, one of the ways to pay for this, obviously, is to have to raise, what is it, the income tax rate for U.S. households with incomes of at least $350,000 annually, individuals with incomes of at least $280,000 annually. So, you know, they're going to be paying a little more, correct? They pay. I think couples with incomes over $350,000 would pay an additional 1% in income taxes.
Yeah, there are two things going on here. Number one is a huge amount of the savings is coming from within the system. So people hear this number, $1 trillion. First thing to understand is this is over a 10-year period. So we're talking about approximately $100 billion a year as we transition our system into one that will reduce costs and be much more sustainable in the long run. A good portion of that is coming from savings within the existing system. However, at least as we transition to this new system, it's going to require some revenue input. And so the House proposal says for that 1% of Americans who have adjustable gross income over $350,000 a year, they're going to be asked to put in a little bit more. These are people who did extremely well when Bush rolled back the tax rates on the very high end at the expense of everybody else in the country and important investments. And so we're asking that they put in a little bit as we move toward this new system. And again, we're talking about, you know, less than 1% of households here, and asking them to share in the obligation going forward.
Which, you know, is going to make people like Sean Hannity scream like a little girl. I always have to torture you with these sound bites when you're here, Congressman.
Let me ask. I don't understand. First of all, we're going to raise taxes to pay for health care, but it's still not going to provide health care for 37 million Americans. 20-some-odd million Americans are going to have to leave their health care. This is the CBO scoring. Why would anybody want nationalized health care? Why do people put their faith in government? I don't put my faith in government.
Because you're a multimillionaire, you twit.
I'm sorry, Congressman. We were hoping you could answer, Sean.
Well, number one, I guess Sean Hannity puts his faith entirely in the insurance companies, which have been essentially making decisions and vetoing the decisions of doctors. Under this plan, it's the doctor and the patient that will be making the decision. And that's what is everyone needs to understand, that this puts the patient and the doctor in the center of the decision making, and it expands choice. I'm not sure why people are so scared of more choice. This public health option is just that. You want it, you can pick it. But if you don't want it, you're going to be able to go to any number of new private plans. And again, employers who are currently covering their employees are provided incentives for keeping them right where they are. And, in fact, the Congressional Budget Office put a lie to the notion that you're going to have this mass migration of people to the public health option. They actually anticipate a very small percentage of people making that choice.
Interesting. Before you go, Congressman, apparently President Obama made it, said that he would even campaign for in Iowa for Chuck Grassley's reelection if you can get health care done. He was just kidding, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Look, the president has made this as obviously his top priority. It was a big issue in the campaign, the need to change the health care system and fix what's wrong with it. And one of the things that members of Congress and Democrats want to know is that the president is firmly behind not just the plan, but he's going to go around the country and use his great influence and his great skills to hammer this point home. And so people are looking for a commitment from the president that he is going to go out to, you know, mainstream America and talk about why this is so important, because we know that the special interests are going to be fighting this tooth and nail. And so it's essential that the president be out there. And the president's given that commitment. He's been very clear he's going to go out there and help members of Congress who join him in this reform effort.
Congressman, quickly before we go, how soon might we see Dick Cheney in jail?
Oh, stop it, Stephanie.
Let me restate that, Congressman. are we almost compelled at this point to have an investigation? I mean, how can you, you know, how can something come out like the fact that the vice president ordered the CIA to lie to Congress and there be nothing done about it?
Well, as vice president, as you know, he spent much of his time in a, quote, undisclosed location, and maybe he'll be continuing to spend a lot of time in an undisclosed location. I think we need to get the facts on this issue before we make any decisions going forward. And I think that, you know, because of the nature of this information, since so much of it is classified, we're going to have to we do have to get to the bottom of this, and people do need to be held accountable, but we need to get the facts.
Yep, absolutely. Congressman Chris Van Hollen, we always appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. There he goes. He's a bigwig, you know. He's in charge of getting the Democrats elected to the seats in the House and the flavor.
Whatever.
The Democratic Congressional... it's the DCCC. Campaign Committee, yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
45 minutes after
Where's
the hour.
Where's the Flavin fit in? Flavin.
He's in charge of that, too. He's in charge of everything. 45 minutes after the hour, back with the latest on the Sotomayor hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
That's the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say about anything.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller Show, 49 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Scott in Raleigh, North Carolina, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, I almost fell out of my chair yesterday when I heard about this Sam Brownback bill that was introduced to ban human-animal hybrids.
Yes, and mermaids and centaurs.
Yeah, and I went online just to see, I heard 20 senators co-sponsored this bill, and I was stunned to find out that Richard Burr, who's one of our senators here in North Carolina, was a co-sponsor. Now, to put this in context, I have been bugging the heck out of his office, among others, to about a bill, S-819, which is the Autism Treatment Acceleration Act. This is going to require insurance companies to cover treatment for autism, which they don't do right now. He can't be bothered with that, but apparently human-animal hybrids is more important.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what we're trying to do here, Chris, in Hollywood, is we're trying to get... just to make him look like the idiot that he is, we want them to have a hearing on it, and we want Daryl Hannah to go. And then I'm going to talk to Ron Perlman next time I see him at RB Celebrity Gym.
Yes, because he was Beast.
He is also a human-animal hybrid.
They get great
human-animal hybrids.
They get great gas mileage, though, from human-animal hybrids.
Okay.
A lot of horsepower.
Hey! You see?
Hey.
Oh!
With the flarg.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to, where is this? Steve in Orange County on healthcare. Hi, Steve.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
You know, I respect all of your opinions, so I just have some questions for you about this health care plan. Because I work for a great union company, and my medical benefits and prescriptions are completely paid for me, am I going to have to get taxed on this at the end of the year because I have paid medical benefits under this new plan?
I'm not sure where the last I heard on that part about taxing benefits, that was not going to be part of the bill.
Yeah, it's not going to be in the new bill.
No, I'm not for that either.
That would not be that would not be fair at all. And also, I think we really need to force companies like Walmart that have a lot of employees to pay for their employees and their families' benefits. It's only fair. The amount of money they have and make, they should pay for their benefits. But also on the flip side, I mean, out here in Southern California, we have a lot of actor wannabes, you know, extras who don't have health insurance. So why don't they swallow their pride and get a job at McDonald's that supplies health benefits or Home Depot, instead of us as taxpayers having to pay for their medical benefits? I will pay for somebody who's out of work or who's elderly, but at the same time, all that money goes into one big pot. You can tax the wealthy, but that money goes into one big pot that pays for toilet seats on the space shuttle that'll pay for people who are too
proud. It gets accounted for.
No, Chris, it doesn't. They just
Yes, it does, Steve.
They
just don't tax the wealthy and go, okay, your extra taxes are just going for
an allotment goes into a fund for health care.
No, Chris, it doesn't really work that way in real life. It, on paper, it does, but it
Steve,
doesn't.
Steve, yes,
in the real world.
Right. It does.
All right, don't fight. You're both pretty.
I took accounting in college. I know how it works.
All right, you slacker actors. You heard Steve. Lord. Get making those McFlurries. Slacking around.
By the way, according to the Washington Post, there have been attempts to make chimeras, human-animal hybrids, for mice with human stem cells. Yeah, it's therapeutic.
No, that's kind of creepy, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So and there's a reason to be.
Does that mean werewolves will get coverage?
Or only in London.
Good news for Michael J. Fox.
Or wolf children.
Yeah, wolf children everywhere.
Yeah.
Werewolves in London aren't covered because of the as you know, the healthcare system
National
there has
health.
Failed. All right, let's go. Let's see what's happening at the Sonia Sotomayor hearings live.
What we do is different than the conversation that the public has about what it wants the law to do. We don't, judges, make law. What we do is we get a particular set of facts presented to us. We look at what those facts are, what in the case of different constitutional amendments is, what states are deciding to do or not do, and then look at the Constitution and see what it says and attempt to take its words and its the principles and the precedents that have described those principles and apply them to the facts before you.
She seems like a crazy judicial activist.
Discussing the Second Amendment as it applied to the federal government, Justice Scalia noted that there had been long regulation by many states on a variety of different issues related to possession of guns. And he wasn't suggesting that all regulation was unconstitutional. He was holding in that case that D.C.'s particular regulation was illegal.
All right. For the love of God, people, she explained this yesterday, for God's
sake. Like you, I understand that how important the right to bear arms is to many, many Americans. In fact, one of my godchildren is a member of the NRA. And I have friends who hunt.
Some of my best friends are hunters.
Exactly. And she had to explain precedent to them once again.
The issue was not
in the New
what
Haven
we would do
case.
Or not do, because we were following precedent. And you went out on circuit court, are obligated on a panel to follow established circuit precedent.
Uh-huh. Unlike that crazy judicial activist, John Roberts.
Yeah.
Who then overturned that. Okay. She also firmly denied racial bias in saying the oft-criticized remark about her Hispanic heritage affecting judicial decisions was a rhetorical device gone awry. She talked about
the words I chose, taking the rhetorical flourish, is a bad idea. I do understand that there are some who have read this differently, and I understand why they might have concern, but I have repeated more than once, and I will repeat throughout, if you look at my history on the bench, you will know that I do not believe that any ethnic, gender, or race group has an advantage in sound judging.
Jeff Sessions sounded unconvinced. He said, as a judge who has taken this oath, I'm very troubled that you would repeatedly over a decade or more make statements like the one that she made in 2001. This is a guy that said the Klan wasn't so bad until he found out they smoked pot. This is a guy that said the NAACP is a what did he say?
Communist-inspired
Yeah, that shoves civil rights down our throats.
Yeah.
You're troubled, are you? Dear God. All right. 57 minutes after the hour. Back with stand-up news and more of the Sotomayor hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm walking on.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Executive producer, Chris LaVoie, voice deity, Jim Moore, to me, Stephanie Miller. This hour of the Stephanie Miller Show brought to you by Pontiac. The Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7/31/09. See dealer for details. Oh, lots of big news going on. The Sonia Sotomayor hearings are proceeding apace. Well-known racists. Senator Jeff Sessions. Oh, dear. Did you hear this yesterday?
You voted not to reconsider the prior case.
Uh-huh.
You voted to stay with the decision of the circuit. And, in fact, your vote was the key vote. And you voted with Judge Cabranes himself, of Puerto Rican ancestry.
Oh.
If you voted with him, you could have changed that case. So.
Interesting. The head of the country's oldest Hispanic organization had the same reaction I did.
Yeah.
He said, Senator Sessions' comment on Puerto Rican ancestry is baffling. First, he focuses on the need to uphold the law based on the Constitution and legal precedent, and then he expects our judges to think exactly alike based on shared ethnicity. Sonia Sotomayor is a brilliant jurist, as is Judge Cabranes. They share a heritage, but are highly capable, varied, intelligent analysis of the law. Senator Sessions should refocus his attention on her 17-year legal career as a judge and allow Judge Sotomayor to respond to valid issues at the hearing. Thank you.
He's the littlest Klansman. How do you fit a hood over that tiny little head?
Those tiny elfin ears.
I'm surprised he's able to tell Clarence Thomas and Barack Obama apart.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I mean, if he thinks that way about...
Negro.
Yeah,
oh,
all ethnicities.
It's a good one. Okay. Well,
God. Right.
Looks like we're going to get us some health care. Charlie Rangel? On the health care bill yesterday.
We've got a long way to go, but we really have eased a lot of concern that people have had.
All right. And Senator Dianne Feinstein on the burgeoning CIA and Dick Cheney scandal.
The thing I think that's out there that is of deep concern to us is the fact that the committee should have been notified when the program, before it commenced. And then we could have watched the program.
Yes. You see, that would be that would have been legal, you see. And what was done was technically then.
Or better yet.
Illegal.
Better yet, you can all just go yourselves. How'd that be?
Well, I think that wouldn't necessarily be illegal. However, it might be uncomfortable.
In fact,
it's without
becoming illegal in less and less states now.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Chris, this is for you from Julian Seattle. Dear Steph, I regret to inform you the nitwit of the North has penned a little essay for the Washington Post.
Which nitwit?
Caribou Barbie.
Oh, Lord.
For fun, why not let Chris comment on Caribou Barbie's jihad on grammar, starting in line one? There is no shortage of threats to our economy.
There are no shortage.
No. Subject and verb agreement.
No, there is no shortage. There is no shortage.
Wait, what did she say?
No, that's correct. She said that there is no shortage.
There is no shortage of threats to our economy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, there is no shortage of
shortage
threats.
Is the noun.
Everything else in there is stupid. It's a...
Yeah, it doesn't agree with threats. It agrees with a shortage.
Why is anyone still asking her what she thinks about anything? She was slamming President Obama's support of a cap and trade program to combat climate change. And so she wrote her little,
screed.
Her little screed. By the way, you know who some of my personal favorite bloggers are? Margaret and Helen.
I love them. They're the old ladies, the cantankerous old ladies.
Yes, and have a blog. Could I have my fine American music, please? They wrote one on the... The headline is, Sarah Palin called a family meeting and the rabbit lived. Margaret, I watched Sarah Palin's resignation speech and all I have to say is, what the hell was that? My God, that woman's an idiot. I've said this before, but I feel I need to say it again. Her problems did not come because the media was against her. Her problems come because every time you stick a microphone in front of her mouth, a whole lot of stupid falls out. Things are getting tough, and once again, she's trying to hide behind that dysfunctional family of hers. She actually stood there and talked about how the Palins had a family meeting and everyone agreed it was time for her to step down as governor. Well, I call bull... The only family meetings the Palins have usually involve someone peeing on an early pregnancy test stick. She was elected to be Alaska's governor for 4 years, and she bailed, having completed less than three. Can you imagine what she might do if she were to make it to the White House? All it would take is for Congress to overturn one veto, and the Palins would be packing up the bearskin rugs in the Oval Office. And I bet they take all the little shampoo bottles from the private residence as well. Like I said a few months back, that woman is a bitch, and I meant it. Really. Really. Margaret and Helen.
Really.
Speaking of which, Jim, I have a thematic guess the quote for you.
Thematic?
It's a theme. It's one with theme.
I think you should have gone with that one instead of thematic.
All right. Yeah. Who said Palin couldn't say what she read because she didn't read anything. She was utterly unconcerned by all this and seemed, in fact, rather proud of it. It was evidence of her authenticity. She experienced criticism as both partisan and cruel because she couldn't see, because she could see no truth to any of it. She wasn't thoughtful enough to know that she wasn't thoughtful enough. Her presentation up to the end has been scattered, illogical, manipulative, and self-reverential to the point of self-reverence. Who said that?
Of course, in her case, it'd be theme Arctic. Because she's far north there.
Yeah.
Frank Rich.
No.
What?
No.
Oh, damn.
Peggy Noonan.
Oh, wow. Peggy Noonan?
Yes, the right wing.
She of the flowery vocabulary?
Pundit. Mrs. Palin's supporters have been ordering her to spend the next 2 years reflecting and pondering, but she is a ponder-free zone. She can memorize the names of the presidents of Pakistan, but she's not going to be able to know how to think about Pakistan. Why do her supporters not see this? Maybe they think not thoughtful is a working-class trope. Who said that?
Carrie Noonan.
No.
She's a friend of mine from college.
No,
also
it's
very
Peggy Noonan again, the right-wing pundit on Caribou Barbie. Who said her lack of any appropriate modesty did her in? Actually, it's arguable that membership in the self-esteem generation harmed her. For 30 years, the self-esteem movement told the young they're perfect in every way. It's yielding something new in history, an entire generation with no proper sense of inadequacy. Who said that?
William F. Buckley Jr.
No.
Oh, he's dead.
Peggy Noonan, who is living and also a Republican.
But Peggy Noonan does not sing Milkshake.
No. All right, Bob
she
and
might even get a couple drinks into her.
I highly doubt that Peggy Noonan can sing Milkshake by Khalees.
But if she would, that would
be great.
Awesome.
Man, that'd be on YouTube for 10,000 years.
I would pay cash money to see that in concert.
Let's try to get her on this show and sing Milkshake. Why not? All right, Bob, who I think refers to Senator Ensign getting his mommy and daddy to pay off his mistress, says, Steph, I was able to borrow some money from my mom. What do you say, Jiggles? You in for some dictation? If it would make you hotter, I could have... Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Jiggles, grab a pad and back that gorgeous butt in here.
Oh, you get away.
Don't act like you don't like it.
If it would make you hotter, I could have my mom write the check directly to you. Apparently, you babes dig that. Bob and Akron. Thank you, Bob. Offered some money from his mommy. Oh, and
someone write me a $92,000 check.
Yeah, I'd like that one really handy.
Shaw.
Heck, a $92 check would come in handy.
Faye in Tulsa has sent me a future husband. This is the shortest man in the world. Have you seen him? He's going to get in the Guinness books.
Jeff Sessions?
No. It's a Kahandra Tapamagar.
Who?
And he's with? He's in Nepal. He claims to be the shortest man in the world. He's 50 centimeters in height and 5 kilograms in weight.
Wow.
Steph, I can just see you two doing the wedding dance to the dulcet tones of Mini Kiss. Oh. That is cute. Look at him. You show up everything you got. You keep on messing around and leaving it hot. You drive a car, we'll drive you crazy. All right, thank
you. He'd be able to pleasure your ankles.
Thank you. Let's check some other news we don't want to lose, shall we?
Yippee. It's time for stand-up news. And now, here's anchor person, Stephanie Miller.
Thank you. In news breaks here at Stays Broken, our top story, older people who drink moderate amounts of alcohol may have lower risk of dementia, according to a new U.S. study.
That's good news for you, Stephanie.
Older people who drink moderate amounts of alcohol.
Moderate amounts.
See, that's funny because I just said it again because I'm old. Our top story, older people who drink moderate...
There you go again.
All right. You see,
tonight in the mind, we discovered a strange phenomenon called déjà vu. That strange feeling that have we just done this?
Oh, look, it's the Sotomayor. Older people who drink moderate amount. All right. Researchers found people who consume between 8 and 14. Sure, that's enough. 14 alcoholic drinks a week had a 37% lower risk of the disease than the general population. Woo! I'm on the right track. All right, we have, who do we have?
Oh, some old dude. Mm. Oh, boy.
Sure, these little pipsqueak scientists finally figured out what I've known all along, and that's that a couple drinks never hurt anybody. Now even say it helps to keep all your marbles when you're old and decrepit like me. They say you gotta be careful, though, because 2 months of a good thing and all that malarkey. Good thing, too, because at my age, you gotta reach out for whatever you can get. Ah, I can feel my brain cells tingling right now.
No.
Let's keep the momentum going. Let's see here. 4 score and 20 years ago, our forefathers brought forth... Oh, hey. Well, I stopped there. Our forefathers bought four-fifths of rye bourbon and moonshine. I guess that'll make them our fifth fathers. I like that. Oh. Mm. Go ahead, try and stop me. E equals MC Hammer. Eat your heart out, Albert Einstein and something. The squaw of the hippopotamus is equal to the sons of the squaws of the other two hides or something. Where was I? Who was I? Uh-oh, something's loose up there. I better take more of the cure. As the philosopher Plato used to say, it's all Greek to me. Freaking Greeks. Flaming cheese. WFT? TF? Whatever. And don't get me started on Ouzo. Ouzo Daddy. Oh, who said that? Somebody say something? Must be Hispanic opera talking.
Yeah.
I forget. I kind of like it. Excuse me.
And finally, the headline is Hillary Clinton plans to reassert herself with a speech. She's ready to articulate her own policy agenda that focuses in part on strengthening America's capacity for what has been called smart power. She's given a speech today at the Council on Foreign Relations. She's bringing the concept of it takes a village to foreign policy, according to one expert. An official suggested an additional motivation, beating back a persistent perception that Clinton has been kept in the administration's shadows. Tina Brown wrote that Barack Obama has confined Clinton to a kind of wifehood of the Saudi variety.
Oh,
and it's time for Barack Obama to let Hillary Clinton take off her burqa. Oh, dear. I think that leads us to another episode.
Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and Mr. and Mr. And Mrs. America, too, and go bleep yourselves, you anti-gay marriage jagoffs. It's time for another installment of America's favorite diplomatic team, Pantsuit and Jug Ears, brought to you by Limbaugh's Pilonidal Cyst Flakes. Tonight's episode, Taking the Broad's View.
Hillary, I'm troubled by what I've been hearing. When I offered you Secretary of State, I thought I'd make myself clear. The accent was on secretary, as in shake a tail feather and get me some coffee in Danish.
Oh.
If the coffee has to actually come from Arabia and the Danish has to come from Denmark, it's fine with me, as long as it's hot when it gets here. But now I'm being told you plan to outline a new pattern of America's role in the world and make your It Takes a Village paradigm the template for America's exercise of power. Did you forget? I'm the president, and it's my catchphrases that are to be used when speaking of policy. You better start talking about the audacity of hope bilateral arms negotiations and the We Are the Change We've Been Looking For counterinsurgency plans. Otherwise, you might just find yourself unexpectedly being denied diplomatic immunity on a trip to some foreign hellhole. Word to the wise, you dig?
Oh, Barack, 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 you've overdosed on your own hopium, haven't you? Don't you know the first rule of politics is to keep your friends close but your enemies closer? If you hadn't decided to gallivant all around the world and leave me behind instead of taking me along and letting me mix it up a little with some of the heads of state you visited, we might just have a productive working relationship. But no, you made me a diplomatic football widow, didn't you? So now it's go time for the Hillary charm offensive, and don't put any money down on who's going to come out carrying the bigger stick, if you know what I mean. Don't ever forget, when it comes to telling men who need to get over themselves who's who and what's what, you're looking at a cross between Nurse Ratchet and Tugboat Annie. So I'd suggest you do what men tell women to do all the time. Lay back and enjoy it, because here it comes. Up your can, up your can, up your can.
Will Barack get Hillary thrown into a tiger cage? Will Hillary take possession of Barack's diplomatic yam sack? Tune in next week, maybe, for another thrilling episode of Pantsuit and Jug Ears.
That's all for stand-up news. I'm here all week. Tell your friends if you'd like more Jim Ward, Fall to Roll.
Jim Ward's apocryphal but true, for which there's a tile ad on the Stephanie Miller website, stephaniemiller.com, and buy the downloadable album, why don't you?
All right. 20 minutes after the hour, we will be back with more of perhaps Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III.
Oh, Lord.
We'll have some more thoughts.
That's a KKK name if I've ever heard
one. We'll have some more thoughts on Sonia Sotomayor's, you know, racist tendencies. As we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's a combination of low self-esteem, low blood sugar, and mixing red wine with my dog's painkillers.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 25 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Ted in Portland on the Sotomayor hearings. Hi, Ted.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
I was calling to express my ideas about what the Republicans are up to. It seems like there are a couple of things to know. It would be that, one, they're just mad as can be that it's not a Republican nominating somebody for the court. And second, that it just scares the daylights out of them to think about anybody getting on that Supreme Court that's not under their thumb, that they can walk up to and just push around anytime they feel like
it. Yep, exactly. Senator Lindsey Graham yesterday in Sonia Sotomayor.
Do you understand, ma'am, that if I had said anything like that, reasoning was that I'm trying to inspire somebody, they would have had my head. Do you understand that?
I do understand how those words could be taken that way, particularly if read in isolation.
Well, I don't know how else you could take that. If Lindsey Graham said that I will make a better senator than X because of my experience as a Caucasian male, makes me better able to represent the people of South Carolina, and my opponent was a minority, it would make national news, and it should.
Yeah, and she said particularly yes if it was taken out of context, as you're taking my comments. She reiterated, I do not believe any ethnic, racial, or gender group has an advantage in sound judgment. They're just going to keep asking this. You said this, Chris, the same question
over and over. And they keep getting the same answer.
Yeah, and particularly hilarious when asked by Senator Jeff Sessions, who has made insensitive remarks about both the Klan and the NAACP, which is why he wasn't confirmed as a judge. I mean, does anyone get the irony, or is it just me? I mean, it's really... Pardon me. In fact, here's a fun fact about Jeff Sessions. His nominative nation never even made it to the Senate floor to be a judge. His home state senator voted against him. Just FYI. Who's asking the questions? All right, Senator Dianne Feinstein yesterday on judicial activism.
This nominee is being characterized as being an activist when she is anything but.
Yeah, thank you. In fact, not enough of a judicial activist for me. All right, the drug-addled gas bag Rush Limbaugh blasted away at ads that targeting his Sonia Sotomayor commentaries and took some new shots at the nominee yesterday, calling. Likening her wise Latina remark to George Allen's macaca joke.
What?
In another episode of, yeah.
And thanks for playing Really Bad Analogies.
And he essentially said she's an angry racist just like Obama.
Yeah, because she seemed so angry yesterday.
Just like Obama, yeah.
28 right. minutes after the hour. Back with that next on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Would you do me the very great honor of eating my shorts?
It is the Stephanie Miller Show, 33 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. John in Austin, Texas, on the healthcare debate. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, go ahead.
I'm kind of scared and I'm kind of pissed because this plan that they announced yesterday, they being the Congress on this healthcare plan, the Democrats, I'm a left-leaning Democrat myself, and what they're saying that it's a right and a responsibility, and that individuals and companies that don't purchase insurance will be heavily penalized. We're going to be corralled, and we're going to be forced to buy insurance from private insurance companies. Now, I'm a musician. I live hand-to-mouth. I can't afford health insurance now, and I'm not going to be able to afford it any better if the government tries to force me to do it.
The system can't afford to pay for your catastrophic bills if you don't have health insurance. It's far more expensive to do that than it is to not cover you.
Listen, I get that. I really get that. But here's the thing. They're gonna penalize the lowest rung of the small businesses, the moms and pops of the world that are trying to run restaurants,
small businesses. It's essentially the top 1%. I mean, it's the people that got the Bush tax cuts are going to have to pay a little more.
I'm not talking about a tax. I'm talking about we're going to be, it's like, you know, in California, here in Texas, we have to buy car insurance, right? We're forced to do it. We have to buy it from, they're going to do that, and they're going to force us to buy from Aetna or somebody like that. State Farm.
You're going to have a whole array of choices to choose from.
You're going to have a public option,
a government option, which will probably be cheaper.
John, what sort of instrument do you play? What kind of musician are you?
I'm a multi-instrumentalist.
So what if you should have a horrific juice harp incident or something?
Juice harp?
You know, I pay cash for my medical now, and
Wait a minute, you pay tax for your medical now? What?
I thought you said you don't have medical.
Yeah.
I pay when I go to the doctor, I pay them cash.
Oh, you pay cash? Okay.
Yeah. And consequently, I can't afford to go very much, and it's going to be even worse now. I don't see how they think that people that can't afford to buy medical insurance now are going to be able to afford it any better if the government forces them to do it. If they pass this thing, Tinkerbell's not going to come along and put fairy dust on everybody, and everybody's going to be able to afford it.
But
this is going to drive people underground. This is going to make people criminals that are not criminals now because their crime will be not being able to afford medical insurance.
But John, if you should have a catastrophic accident where you need to, where your bills are in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and you can't afford to pay them, you would declare bankruptcy. And the system can't afford to have everybody declare bankruptcy. That is what is broken with the system. That is why they're going to require everybody to have health insurance.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is there should be a publicly funded option. In other words, it shouldn't be privatized.
Right.
I hate insurance companies, and I don't want to give them any of my money.
Well, then you can choose the public option.
But then I still have to pay, right?
Well,
yes.
You said you're paying cash now when you go to the doctor.
That's right.
You can't keep that up.
Look, there are people that sometimes they have good months and bad months. I'm not going to be able to steadily make a premium payment every month. I can't do it now. I would if I could. But I can't. This is my point. I'm not trying to be difficult.
And that's what President Obama is trying to fix.
Right. And where are you getting that we're going to criminalize people? I mean,
it says right in my newspaper that individuals and companies that do not purchase health insurance will be heavily penalized. Penalized. Will be fined or criminalized. But they haven't stated which one.
Nobody's going to be a criminal if they don't have health insurance.
No, there's, obviously the point is to insure the most people that we can.
If small business owners can't afford to provide health insurance for their employees, then those employees will always have the government option.
Yeah.
He was talking a lot of hooey.
Medicare works. I mean,
yes,
they've been
doing
it for years.
Yeah.
The plan that the Congress has works. In Europe, free government supported health care works.
Sean Hannity said it doesn't work and failed in other places like England and stuff like that. Didn't you, Sean? I thought you said that.
Where constitutionally does everyone deserve free medical care? How did we survive 200 plus years, 233 years without nationalized medicine? It's failed in Canada. It's bankrupt. It's failed in France. It's bankrupt. It's failed in England.
No.
Your friend Sean Hannity is a liar, Stephanie.
Have you ever lived in France, Sean?
No.
Wow.
So. He's never stepped foot outside of America, obviously.
Mm. Actually, the right to the pursuit of life would be the first thing in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, life. If you're not alive, then you can't get to the other things in the
See, the point of
pursuing of the happiness.
Healthcare is healthcare, caring for people who are sick or preventing them from getting sick in the first place. Here, the point is to make insurance companies rich.
Yes.
And they do that by excluding people who are likely to get sick. The very people who need the health care the most.
And that is what is broken with the system.
Thank you. Carol in Bloomington, Indiana, on our last caller. Hello, Carol.
Oh, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Listen, I just want to comment on this last caller on his rant. There is an exemption. There's an exemption for a small business.
Right.
So that shouldn't be an issue. And also, these premiums are based on your income. So I don't see how this is going to be anything but a win-win for this guy. I think he just panicked or something. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. But it is the fear-mongering that people like Sean Hannity and others do. You know, just this, oh, you're going to get thrown in jail if you die. It's like, what? No. No, it's being criminalized. And no, the system hasn't failed. We had, what was it, the other day? We had story after story of people that have been in, whether it's England or Canada or whatever, that have, you know, when's the last time you heard a happy healthcare story?
Exactly.
It's like every story, right? It was like, I broke my leg in
and they fixed
England,
it for free.
And the doctor came to the house at 10 o'clock and it cost a dollar. Like, what? What does seems so
what a
awful.
Disaster.
Yeah.
Also, communism.
We can't have that here.
It's bullcrap what that caller was saying, because if you're a shop that employs more than 50 people and you don't provide insurance, you have to pay a $750 a year per employee fine. If you employ less than 50 employees, then you don't have to provide health insurance.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a load of crap that caller was trying to shovel
Thank you.
On us.
Will in Chicago on healthcare as well. Hello. Ooh, wait a minute. Let's go to Eric first. Eric in Jersey, you're on the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome. Hello, Eric.
Oh, hey, Stephanie.
Hi, go ahead.
I wanted to respond to the caller who was insisting that he's going to pay some outrageous amount of money for his health insurance. There was a provision in this bill, I was reading it on MSNBC, that said that for people who make under a certain amount of money, they're going to be subsidized by the government a certain amount.
Right.
So he's not going to be paying more than he's paying now for his cash visits, which I'm sure are outrageously priced anyway.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
So
yep.
He's worrying for nothing or
exactly.
a troll.
Yep, exactly.
You know, it's all of the money that the insurance companies are spending on muddying up the waters like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And getting people confused as to what's going to go on.
And the percentage we're paying for management, you know.
Absolutely.
They're looking for a new Harry and Louise ad to try to sway people that this is awful. It's the worst thing ever.
Will in Chicago.
Hi, good morning, guys.
Hi.
You know, I'm one of your listeners who's actually traveled outside the borders of the United States.
Oh, my
what?
God.
And
you survived?
I lived in Germany for 3.5 years.
So did I.
My son was born in Berlin. I had no surgery while I was over there. Do you know that every child in Germany under the age of 18 gets free health care and free prescriptions? They take care of their children.
That
over
sounds
there.
Awful.
Isn't that horrible? this is what I'm doing starting today. I am flying my flag upside down to show my politicians that our country's under distress and we need health care today, not tomorrow, no triggers. And honestly, I don't think this public option thing is going to work. We need a systematic universal health care like they have in every other industrialized country in the world.
Civilized world.
I encourage every listener to take their American flag and start hanging them upside down and show everyone that this is a serious issue.
It could be misinterpreted.
And,
yeah, that could be misinterpreted.
It's the easiest, quickest way to show solidarity on this issue. It happened to hit me the other day that, you know, we need something that's universally recognized and something that people will continue to bring the discussion. You know, I've been calling my senators and my representatives. I've been writing emails. But I think we need something similar to like what they had the peace sign during the 60s where, you know, take your flag out, fly it upside down, and show your neighbors in your community that you want universal health care now.
Will you also?
No more waiting.
You also might get the cops to your house, too, because it's a sign of distress.
I understand that, but our country's in distress.
Well, I know, but practically...
You'll be like, I don't have health care. Are you having a medical emergency? No. I just want nationalized health care.
Yes, are you kidnapped? No, I just want...
No.
So I don't know that that's a good
idea. Put your hands behind your back.
Hang the German flag outside.
There you go.
There you go. 43 minutes...
I wouldn't be able to tell if that was upside down or right side up. Seriously.
43 minutes after the hour. Oh, look, it's angry leprechaun Senator Jeffrey Beauregard, Sessions III.
Get your hands up, me lucky charms.
We'll be back with the latest on the Sotomayor hearings as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
So much fun, it should be illegal.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 48 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Lauren in Reno on the healthcare debate. Hey, Lauren.
Hi. I'm calling to tell you that, you know, my husband and I followed the rules. We're small business owners, and we got catastrophic insurance. Well, my husband ended up having a stroke, ended up in the hospital for 18 days. Catastrophic only paid for $30,000 worth of our bills. We still owe the hospital loan close to $69,000. What about those of us who follow the rules, who get the insurance? We're, you know, we're upside down on everything that we have. Our employees right now make more money than what we make because we're trying to keep our employees employed. I'm going to have some surgery done in November. I went to go see the surgeon yesterday. They wouldn't see me because the insurance would not pay for the office visit. I had to pay $275 out of my pocket to see the doctor. And I said, well, can't I just pay a little bit and then you guys bill me? No, we no longer bill.
Oh, boy.
Wow. You have to pay it up front.
Yeah.
So for those of us who have been following the rules, what happens next?
Well, that's the problem is that, you know, the rules are broken. The system as it is broken. You know, I mean, I hear what you're saying. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what I have to hope. You know, look, there are so many elements of this bill. You know, we talked to Congressman Van Hout. Oh. Do you have pet insurance?
No, she is my insurance.
But we talked to Congressman Van Hollen about it this morning. That you know, I guess the good news is they're starting to get something done. Like what all the elements are, and you know, like you say, I think everybody has a story and how it's going to help you. I'm not sure, you know, what elements are going to remain in or not by the time the House and Senate versions get done. But I feel your pain.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've been talking about declaring bankruptcy, my husband and I. Mm-hmm. And here in Reno, Reno is number four in the nation of homes being upside down, being upside down their homes. So my example is my neighborhood. The house next door just sold for $35,000. The house next door to that sold for $45,000.
You
know,
so I'm in that one of those neighborhoods that the house across the street was foreclosed, behind me, next door to me, three doors down, both corners, just on my block.
Yeah. But, and, you know, it's everywhere. I mean, I've got a friend in a really high-end neighborhood down in San Clemente, upside down. Her whole neighborhood's upside down in their houses. And same problems you're having with medical stuff, and they can't afford insurance now, and, you know. So,
I know. So with my own surgery, where my husband and I discussed this morning, okay, I guess we're going to wait to declare bankruptcy until after you get done with your surgery. Well, yeah, I guess we're going to have to.
Mm.
Because if we go through the same insurance crap that we went through with his stroke, we're not going to be able to afford the surgery either.
Yep, I hear you, honey. Well, I hope help is on the way. All right, so the Sonia Sotomayor hearings are continuing. I think I mentioned Rush Limbaugh yesterday said there's no question what the woman is. She reflects the racial anger attitude that Obama has. They both use that anger to advance themselves throughout their careers. She's a radical.
Oh, boy. He really doesn't believe.
No, I don't think
so. No, he knows what he does in showbiz.
Yeah.
All
garbage.
Right. Charles Krauthammer on the Burr show.
Her main issue is that she's a believer in identity politics.
Mm.
And to say, as she did in that clip, judge me on my record is, again, disingenuous. As a lower of the court, the judge, her record,
crazy.
Her actions are constrained by precedent and the law. Once she is on the Supreme Court, she is unconstrained, untethered, and she will act on her beliefs, and you know her beliefs from what she said. And it wasn't only a flourish said once, she said it about six times, and she had it published in a law journal article. That's a statement of who she is, and that's who she's going to be on the bench.
Yeah, she's going to go crazy. Okay.
God.
Yeah, she's going to rip her robe off and give Clarence Thomas a lap dance, I'm sure. All right.
Ew.
Whatever.
All right, Charles.
I don't want to see either one of them naked.
Like that, actually.
Here's what the Republicans are left with. John Ensign, who you got to give them credit for having cojones. He says he's not only not quitting, he's going to run again.
Really?
He said, I fully plan on running for re-election. I'm going to work to earn their respect back. And if that doesn't work, he's going to have his parents pay you off. He's going to have his parents send you a little gift.
Mommy and daddy.
Mommy and daddy have all money for you.
Dig you out of any hole.
Oh, boy. Okay, here is what else the right is left with. You heard of the soldier that is balking at deploying? You know why, Jim? Because he says Obama isn't really president because he wasn't born here.
Are we still going through that?
Yeah. He's set to deploy to Afghanistan. He says he shouldn't go. His reason, Barack Obama was never eligible to be president because he wasn't born in the United States.
Or maybe it's because he doesn't really want to go to Afghanistan.
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe because he's a scaredy cat.
FYI, president born in Hawaii.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, birth certificate has been published.
Yes.
You can see it on the internet.
It's
World
a state.
Net
yeah,
Daily
it's a state.
Even acknowledges
it's a state.
That.
It's a state. Okay, and also the Republicans left with the Dick and Liz show. Vice President Dick Cheney's harpy daughter said yesterday she doesn't believe her father did anything wrong. Oh, okay. Well, then let's just forget the investigations. In connection with the secret CIA operation, at the same time, she accused Nancy Pelosi and Democrats of seeking to politicize arguments over how the... Oh, I see, because they're pointing out that the things the Bush administration did were illegal, particularly by her war criminal father.
Right.
That shouldn't... I see. Asked directly on MSNBC whether her father directed the CIA not to keep Congress informed of the program, she said, this is a classified program. He doesn't talk about classified programs. See how tricky that is? She aggressively defended him while refusing to say point blank whether he had violated any rule or law. The closest she can claim was declaring there's no evidence of that. She said, I think it does a disservice to former CIA directors and the intelligence community to politicize the issue. Because, you know, Bush and Cheney never did anything to politicize
anything. No, not at all.
They would never stoop to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Meanwhile, the House Intelligence Committee has asked the CIA to provide documents about the now-canceled program to kill al-Qaeda leaders. Congressional officials said the CIA said Tuesday the agency would cooperate in the House move, a precursor to what would likely become a full-blown investigation into the operation and why the program was not disclosed to Congress. Which
some
is,
thought that that might just be a cover story, that that was never about killing al-Qaeda members, but had more to do with spying on Americans.
Just think? All right. So by the big breaking news this morning, of course, the Senate also has made progress on health care. The Democrats in the House unveiled a revised version with a public option yesterday.
That's right.
And the Senate this morning?
Oh, the Senate Health Committee passed a version of the health care reform bill. And it's actually the first committee on Capitol Hill to do so, to pass any kind of health care reform legislation. So,
wow.
Making progress.
The party of no, led by, among others, Senator Richard Shelby, he said, we don't need to build on taxes during a recession, and we certainly don't need a government-run health care plan. Okay, Skippy.
Whatever.
Are they really trying to be obtuse?
Apparently.
No, it just comes naturally.
Okay.
The president conceding unemployment will get worse before it shrinks unveiled a $12 billion plan to help community colleges prepare millions of people for a new generation of jobs. He said, I love the folks who helped get us in this mess and then suddenly say, well, this is Obama's economy. That's fine, he said, give it to me. My job is to solve problems, not to stand on the sidelines and gripe. He said unemployment, it's obviously difficult to say how high it will go. He said how employment numbers are going to respond is not yet clear. My expectation is we will probably continue to see unemployment tick up for several months. I've said this over and over. I'm no happier than anyone else about this economy, but you can't really expect that he's going to have turned around this Bush economy in less than 5 months. All right. Jeremy in L.A., last one on healthcare today. Hello, Jeremy.
Hey, first of all, I won't disagree with you guys that the system is broke, because it definitely is. It's a mess. But I just find it striking that at a time like this, financially, economically, that we are trying to do something as far as radically changing the system when we're broke, essentially. When, you know, we're in a $10 billion a
yes,
month.
Yes, well, part of the reason we're broke is because of the health care system in this country.
No. But you can't, but right now to approach that, and I think what is interesting, too, is that...
We can't afford not to fix it, Jer. I understand that. I just don't understand this argument. We can't afford it. Now we can't afford that because...
No, we couldn't afford to fight World War II either, but we managed to do it.
Yeah. 57 minutes after the hour. That's it for us. I'd like to thank Chris LeBoy, Jim Ward, and Rebecca Baker. We'll see you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.